Hello, internet people, and welcome back to another episode of Inbound Unbound by Protocol 80. I'm your host, Zachary Ware, and joining me today is my friend, my colleague, Rachel Close. Rachel, how are you today?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Good. I'm doing fantastic today. Great. Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
So, Rachel, we're going to be talking about a pretty fun topic today. Fun, at least, I think. So, today, we're going to be talking all about building a brand voice and getting known online, something that's becoming increasingly important for especially folks in our industry that we work with, primarily the manufacturing industry, something that's increasingly important for them to work on. But before we get into all of that fun stuff, Rachel, tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do here? You know, what's your background? What are you interested in when it comes to all things media?
All right. Well, currently I am the digital media specialist here at Protocol 80. I do photo, video, and graphic design work for our clients. In my past, I was the social media manager at the University of Pittsburgh at Bradford, where I did a lot of stuff relating to this topic today. Still today, it's my current job, very important to remember brand voice for our clients. But I learned a lot there about brand voice and its importance to the university. So that's kind of where I get my background for this topic. And I did a lot of video and photo at the university as well. So
very cool. So you do a lot of photo and video for us and our clients as well. In fact, I think just got back from a photo and video shoot where we're launching a new pseudo web series for one of our manufacturing clients. I don't think we can give the name at this point, but how do you think that's going? What kind of stuff are they looking at doing?
So they were kind of going, just giving a high overlook at some important things that they do in their company to try to get people interested in the services that they provide. So we're doing a short 5 to 7 minute videos where their experts kind of speak on those topics and try to get customers intrigued in their services.
So. Yeah, it's really cool. I got to be on some of the groundwork with some of that like months ago at this point. It's exciting to see it come to fruition and so many different team members working on that. And this thing that started off is just a general idea, wanting to kind of build their own brand voice online, seeing it form into this really, really cool video project and something that's going to scale very nicely for them. It's something that nobody else in their vertical or any of the four verticals that they operate in Keeley is really doing. I think it's going to be something that sets them apart. Very topical for what we're doing today. More on that later to any future listeners. Maybe we'll get some permission from the client to talk about what they're doing, what they're seeing success with, and some hurdles that they've encountered along the way. And who knows, maybe we'll have the opportunity to bring in some people from their team too. I'm sure they'd love to join us here.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah. So let's dive in head first. So I'm going to start off with a great question here. Something that I think a lot of people are, you know, they have some familiarity with, especially somebody who's familiar with the world of online marketing. But I just want to know from you, Rachel, what does it mean to have a brand voice online?
So I think having a brand voice online is a really important part of displaying your brand's personality to the world. You kind of get to show who you are as a company and what you do and just the kind of the vibe that you'd like to exude to the world. And I think that it's important to remain consistent. It's all about tone and style and just kind of how you present yourself. Also highly tied to visual identity. The way that you'll want to present your brand online would have to be consistent through the visuals and the messaging you do on social media, email, website, stuff like that. So I think those two things are very important to just getting your brand's personality out there.
You hit on two things that I really like to see covered right there. And admittedly, this is definitely not my area of expertise. That's why we have you here. But it's something that I've tried to explain to clients, sometimes successfully, sometimes not, over the years, of having a consistent brand voice and developing almost your personality into it. A lot of times what we want to see is brands take on a personality all of their own.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to tie this into a point a little bit later when it comes to the world of search marketing and SEO. But in the world of just online marketing, there's I think this growing push to think past B2C or B2B marketing and instead focus on B2H marketing, business to human marketing, mm-hmm. or even H2H marketing, human to human, since at the end of the day, that's truly what it is. And that's something that I think a lot of these brands are starting to realize. Something that we've seen pretty successfully with, what is it, the Wendy's Twitter page in years past?
For sure.
Yeah, they are the kings of building a brand voice online mm-hmm. and getting known and really capitalizing on that B2C / B2H medium. And consistency is absolutely key there. I'm really glad that you touched on that. Something that we sometimes struggle with, admittedly, across some of our accounts, and sometimes we do quite successfully, is manage that level of consistency across whatever the medium is or whatever the channel is, be it email, like you mentioned, or social is a huge one because it puts you directly in front of your target audience in an organic and immediate fashion across your website messaging and really every point or every touch point that that user has with your brand, making sure that it's a consistent brand voice. And it's not too jarring.
Yeah.
Like, imagine how strange it might be going back to our Wendy's example if they were hyper formal everywhere.
Yeah.
And all their social platform was.
Just
was,
suddenly, they're just yeah. super formal. No, yeah. that you're completely right. You're completely right. And that kind of goes into like one of the other points I had was same with visually. Like, you can't just go from one day being like Wendy's is goofy, silly, using memes and stuff to suddenly you're very serious and you're posting like flow charts and stuff. Like, it's, you gotta be consistent. And if you wanted to change your brand voice, you'd kind of have to do like a complete overhaul, very slowly re-rolling out a brand.
You mentioned something really cool there that I want to kind of touch on a little bit too.
All right.
Using memes
yeah.
in your marketing. How do we feel about using memes in marketing, especially in social?
I think it depends.
Are you in favor?
It depends. I think it can work for some brands and it would be not as much for others. If you're kind of more where we are in the manufacturing and healthcare kind of thing, I think it might be a little strange sometimes to use memes. But then again, we have some fun clients that I could see maybe dabbling in memes. So I think it all depends, and I think that it depends on your audience. That's kind of something I was going to talk about later. You have to kind of know your audience and their values and interests, and you kind of have to align your brand to that audience so you can kind of get them to resonate with you. And like, it will work for some brands that maybe the target audience is a little younger. The brand is a little less serious, like fast food. You can use memes in there, but you know, medical equipment, maybe not so much.
you don't want memes selling you medical equipment?
Maybe. It depends on your brand's voice, like we're talking about.
Tell you what, I'm definitely in favor of more memes in social media.
Yeah.
I think we need more of it. Because again, like I mentioned, at the end of the day, you're not marketing to another brand, you're marketing to an individual. And who doesn't enjoy a good meme, right? If it can convey a message in just like 8 words, then you nailed it as a marketer.
Oh, you're right. Plus, completely right.
Anecdotally, I've been trying to get a little bit more involved in LinkedIn and different social platforms, and some of the highest engaging content that I post is when I just have an idea for a really silly meme mm-hmm. that just conveys a point very quickly. Like, one of my favorite was from earlier on in this year. It was Travis Kelce yelling at Coach Reed, and gosh, so many different use cases for that in the world of marketing. And yeah. So I definitely think that they have their place. I guess they should be used a little sparingly, like you mentioned. But yeah, I'm definitely in favor of using memes in marketing.
Overall, me too.
Good. So if a company was looking to start defining a brand voice, what would they do? What would they need to start with? How do they even conceptualize getting started?
Yeah, that's kind of what I just went into a little bit with the meme discussion there. I think it's important to know your audience. Their values, their interests, where they're coming from, why they're coming to you, and kind of, so you know what tone and voice will resonate with the people that are coming to you. So to define your brand voice, I think you'll want to first identify what your brand's personality is and remain consistent, but be authentic. Like you're saying, we're talking to humans. We're not marketing usually to another company. You're trying to speak with humans, and you just want to be authentic and have that personality. And then once you're able to define your own brand voice, it's great to kind of keep that in sort of a document. Like, we have style guides for the visual elements and then kind of tone guides, brand guides for the other elements. So when you're using this brand voice across a couple different people, like I do graphics and then others do the writing, and you're going to want to make sure it all kind of aligns with that authentic voice. That's kind of where I would go with defining your brand voice.
Awesome. And just to add on to that, I know in the years past, we've grown with the types of clients we work with, right? We've gone from working with smaller, I don't want to call them mom and pop shops, but smaller, more local brands to much larger, medium size and now enterprise level accounts where they've already got like a defined brand mm-hmm. voice. But I remember years back working with some folks to try to figure that out online.
Yeah.
And one of the most important factors to that is just get started, post something that you're okay posting, you know, mm-hmm. get something out there, be it on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, or wherever your specific audience is. And then start testing, you know, different verbiage, different messaging, mm-hmm. different formats, see what's going to resonate with your audience the most mm-hmm. and sink your teeth into it, you know. Lean into it. If your audience absolutely loves the memes, lean into it. Maybe yeah. we need to see more Travis Kelce in our Twitter feeds. Or, you know, if they're completely resistant, maybe you've learned something and mm-hmm. it's time to pivot.
Completely. But
yeah, so that was one of the biggest things, was just getting started. Take mm-hmm. your key messaging, see how it can be extrapolated, and anymore. I think AI permeates into everything. Mm-hmm. You know, it's $20 a month for a ChatGPT Plus subscription. If you're having trouble defining your brand voice or having trouble getting started, you've just, got some like generalized sales and marketing collateral. Maybe it'd be a great idea to upload some of that to GPT and see if it can help you, you know, come up with a core starting point for your messaging. Maybe it can help you put some guide rails in place for it.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. Definitely.
So something I just touched on, what platforms do you think make the most sense for businesses specifically?
So that kind of took me back to what we practiced a lot when I worked at the university, which wouldn't necessarily qualify in the same realm of the businesses that we work with now, of course, but it kind of works with all kinds of branding in my mind across the board, is that there's so many different platforms that will make sense for one business and not another. And you kind of need to figure out where your target audience is online and go from there. And this was the example I've written down that I really loved. When I worked at the university doing social media, we were kind of just posting the same thing everywhere. We were realizing that many of like the messaging wasn't getting recognized as much on one platform versus the other, or not by the same age group. So we were wondering how we can connect more with current and prospective students. And we did this audit of our social media where we used a program to kind of see what age groups were where, what demographics were where, and made some charts of that, took a look at it. And we realized that our current prospective students are looking at stuff like Instagram and TikTok to kind of connect with us and learn about us. They love, like, a lot of them, like, students will love seeing photos of themselves or other people they know up on Instagram, stuff like that. But parents and grandparents of students or prospective students, when they're researching us, they go to Facebook, is what we notice. There's a huge spike in that age group, parent to grandparent, looking at our content on Facebook.
I feel attacked. I don't have an Instagram, and I Instagram. Very rarely use TikTok.
Oh my God. I don't use TikTok either, but Instagram is my number one. I'm 25, so I guess I would kind of fall in that age group, but I use Facebook a lot too. So
yeah, I'm 30 and I don't scroll Facebook. And yeah.
And then, yeah, just I think a great way to start learning what platform is makes most sense for your business is doing an audit of your platforms, see what demographics are where, and then you can target the correct audience and adjust message accordingly. That's something that I've put into practice that I found worked. So
awesome. I'm glad that you prefaced that whole thing with, you know, you realized something might not be working from the social presence.
Yes.
And so you sat down to do a comprehensive audit mm-hmm. of what was going on. So you had the empirical data to back up your findings. And I feel like a lot of times, for better or for worse, we kind of fall into the trap that we think, you know, Facebook is always B2C and it's only, you know, elderly parents and yeah. grandparents scrolling through it, looking at AI generated images. And LinkedIn is always for the business professional, white collar guy, and nobody else. And Twitter is for,
I don't know who it's for anymore. Yeah, that was a big question that we didn't get the answer to when we did this audit back. It was probably around last year at this time. So
yeah,
that's when it was all kind of changing in Twitter world too. So
yeah, but there's this, I think, incorrectly, this perception out there that, you know, one demographic is only ever on one platform too. So I'm glad that you guys had the research to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when we're doing buyer interviews, persona generation, and things like that for our accounts, we'll go through and we'll try to do our own light level with that research. And a lot of times what we'll find is, you know, our clients will only ever think that they're, because we operate primarily in B2B, our clients will only really ever think that they're core demographic is on LinkedIn because they're business professionals. But when we start actually speaking to their audience, to their current members, that's not the case. They are active on Instagram. They're active on Facebook. They're active on TikTok, on Twitter for some reason, or X, whatever the heck it's called.
Yeah.
They're active on all these other platforms. And then they just use something like LinkedIn just to showcase their own certifications or to update their, you know, their online resume or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's these incorrect perceptions about who's using what social platform.
Oh yeah, you'd be surprised kind of what you discover if you do those kinds of comprehensive audits, because like I said, it is true that you had a higher level of student age looking at our Instagram and parent age looking at Facebook, but that doesn't mean that students weren't still looking at our stuff on Facebook and parents weren't looking on Instagram. They were still there. It was just what they ended up interacting with more overall, and what, that's kind of how we decided to target our messaging in a different direction. So, but yeah, there can be some really interesting things you can find doing something like that for sure.
Yeah, most definitely. I want to take this next point for us. How do you get engaged with users online? And then see what you have to add to it. So I had the pleasure of, actually, Rachel, I don't think you and I have had a chance to talk about this. Do you know Kurt Anderson? Have you had a chance to meet him yet?
I have not.
Kurt's an awesome guy. Very, very, very great guy. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Donnie, Holly, and Josh here, and then Kurt and one of his friends slash colleagues that he works with last week for a little live sesh that we did on LinkedIn. And this topic came up: how do you engage with users online? And I think it's such an important topic now because of how significantly this ties into the world of SEO. I'm a legacy SEO. I've got years and years of experience in it. And anymore, we're starting to see this massive paradigm shift in SEO. Are you familiar with Google Core algorithm updates or anything? Okay. She's shaking her head. No. So what we're going to do is, Rachel, you're going to be my audience for this. I'm going to try to teach you a little bit about this because I'm doing the same thing here Thursday live up in Buffalo.
Oh, cool.
So recently there was a Google Core algorithm update that came around. You know, they happen a couple times a year. They shake up all of Google search results. This one was kind of like a follow-up to one that happened late last year called the HUC, the helpful, or HCU, helpful content update. This one is supposed to be like a spam update where Google aimed to reduce spam in search results by about 40%. So what we saw was, or what we're seeing is an improved leveraging of social signals to make sure that, you know, you are who you say you are, mm-hmm. and that you're an authoritative content and that you exist outside of the world of your blog. Very, very cool stuff. But when we're talking about what platforms make sense for businesses, how do you get engaged with users online? What I think a lot of people fail to realize is that this now has a direct correlation with how well you show up in Google search, likely how well you will eventually show up in Bing search, DuckDuckGo, Ecosia, Yandex, Yahoo, all the big search engines. So how do you engage with users online? This is a specific topic that came up in the session with Kurt Anderson last week. By the way, if you don't know Kurt Anderson, if you aren't connected with him on LinkedIn, reach out, connect with him, shares tons of great information, great guy to follow, and just try to absorb as much as you can from him. So I didn't get engaged with users online. One of the things that we were talking about was how you can niche down, as Kurt likes to say, or niche down. Find your specific audience, find the users who are asking questions that you know the answers to, and then overshare. And I mean it truthfully, answer every question as deeply and thoroughly as possible. You don't have to spend hours a day doing this, but find your audience, whether it's on LinkedIn, whether it's on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, wherever it is, Google's got eyes on all of it. And then start engaging with your audience. Show the social platform, show your audience, and show the search engines that you know what you're talking about. become the expert in your field online. And I should mention, don't just do this from a branded account either. So, you know, if you work for Microsoft, don't just do it from a Microsoft account. If you work for, I don't know, Pandora or Panda Express, either Panda, don't just do it from the corporate accounts. Do it from your own account too, because that's linked back and the juice flows upwards. So make sure that you become an industry expert and make sure that you're known online for it. I think it's going to kind of tie into building your own personal brand too, but you know, all that's going to flow upwards.
Yeah, I think you had a way better grasp on that specific question than I did, because my answers are nothing like that. But I did learning that. Well, mine was just some silly. It was going more towards how you get users to engage in your social media posts is more how I took that question. But yeah, that's just because I'm not very familiar with the world of SEO, and that wasn't where my mind went to social media like immediately. Sure. And I mean, we always just were talking about when we were losing interactions, trying to diversify content, trying new styles of content that see what catches your audience attention, you know, kind of do another kind of little audit style thing. Start posting, instead of posting one photo, try posting carousel photos on Instagram. You post a lot of photos, try posting reels, try going out, talking to students all around campus and post a reel of it. It'd be more organic, those kind of things, and take a look later at what kind of things spiked in interest on those social media platforms. So that was kind of more where I went with the question. But
no, I love that. That's great insight. A little bit deeper than what I had too.
Yeah, so a little bit different, but still important.
All right, controversial topic coming up next.
Yeah.
How do we feel about influencers for business? First and foremost, yes or no? Do you like it or no?
So it kind of depends.
Yes or no? Do you like it or no?
Overall, me personally, I don't know. I fall right in between, because there's recently an ad. I love the brand Bose. I have Bose headphones. I have Bose speakers in my car. I have Bose portable speakers. And I saw one of my favorite artists did an ad for Bose. And I know he's not an influencer, a musician, but still, like, I saw that and I thought it was awesome. But like, if it was someone that I didn't enjoy, or it was just some maybe internet personality type person, I would have been like, well, what kind of authority does that person point.
How are we defining influencer here?
Yeah, so like, of course I will accept him endorsing Bose because he's a musician and those are speakers. But if it was just some TikTok star or something, I'd kind of question their authority. And so really it depends on your industry, who you're going to use, and how you're going to use them. And that's kind of my answer. I can like them sometimes, and I cannot like them other times.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I like kind of narrowing in on the notion that you have to have a defined space for your influencer. I mean, if it's just some random guy that's got a lot of followers is on Instagram, let's say a million.
Yeah, that's a lot. That would be definitely an influencer for sure.
Okay, let's cut that down by half and 500,000 followers.
I think that would still be an influencer.
All right, I'm just showing you how little I know about Instagram, evidently. But let's say we have like a mid-tier influencer. Yeah, on Instagram, much less likely to actually influence people to purchase a product rather than just to get a product in front of a lot of people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess there's that we need to take into consideration too, visibility versus target audience and intent.
Yeah.
Do you just want impressions on it? Do you want eyeballs on it? Or do you actually want engaged audience to take somebody's word for it?
There's a lot of controversy around stuff like that as well. Like, I remember when I was still in college, we were talking about it in my social media communications class. There are, I'm going to use the Kardashians, Jenners as an example, just because they have caused a lot of controversy in the influencer advertising world. They've had several scandals where they're advertising some product that ends up being like pretty harmful, like the skinny teas and weird creams.
Oh, yeah,
and
the laxative teas.
Yeah, so like in some ways it could be kind of harmful, and you got to kind of know that you're putting that kind of product in front of millions and millions of people by using someone like that to advertise your product. And yeah, it can get sketchy too at times. So That's another point that I always think of with the influencer market. You have to be extremely careful who you work with. And as an influencer, you have to be extremely careful on what kind of product you're going to endorse. You have to probably actually know what the product is, which, sorry, Kardashians, Jenners, I don't know if you even know what some of the products you're advertising are. You're just getting a lot of money to do it.
Yeah, so a lot of caution to be had on both sides from the brand to make sure that that specific influencer, A, has a following of humans and not just bots online.
Yes.
And B, to make sure that they're not going to go off and do anything super crazy.
Yes.
and could potentially backwards harm the brand. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of caution to be had on the side of the influencers too, making sure that the product that they are promoting or the service that they're promoting isn't going to be harmful in some way, like those terrible laxative teas.
Yes. Yeah, that was a big one. I mean, back in like 2018 when we were talking about this, like that was big news because like we were saying, it can be good or it can be really bad. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I'd be interested if anybody listening has had any super positive experience with any influencer marketing. Yeah. I think it's something that we've looked at a few different times to potentially try, but something that we've always strayed away from. I know that there are a ton mm-hmm. of platforms out there that can pair a specific brand with industry influencers.
Interesting.
Yeah, we've looked at those quite a few times over the years, but it's not anything we've ever pulled the trigger on.
Yeah,
we get so deep down into it, and then there's always just something like a gut feeling that mm-hmm. hits us, and we just want to pull away last seconds.
Yeah. Hey, it makes sense based on what we just talked about.
Yeah,
got to be really careful. So
yeah, so if anybody has had any success or has seen the opposite of success with influencers, you know, let us know. We'd be super interested to hear it and maybe have you on a future podcast.
Love to know.
All right, so a brand is there. They're active online. They're active across different mediums. They are publishing content left and right. They are engaged in different communities. They're, you know, spouting off a thousand different things. They've got a custom ChatGPT in place that can help them write, you know, 100 different answers every minute. But content for the sake of content, even social content, isn't the goal.
Yeah.
We want content that resonates. Yes. So how can a brand actually create content, social content specifically, that's going to resonate with people?
So I feel like that kind of goes back to another point I made earlier where you have to really understand your audience. Like we would always talk about amount of posting. The program that we use would suggest how many Instagram posts we made a day, how many Facebook posts we made a day. And in my mind, yes, it's great to get as much content in front of people's eyes as possible. But at the same time, you want that to be quality content. You don't want to just keep throwing things. And I feel like that's kind of where some people have that misunderstanding. They think like more is better on social media, and it can be. At the same time, just keep throwing stuff out there. The people are going to kind of get, I feel like your audience might get a little disillusioned with how much you're posting.
We're like that.
Yeah, like you constantly, every 3 times a day, I see this brand post. Like, are you really going to keep wanting to interact with it? I don't know, because it's not focused towards quality. It's more focused towards quantity. And I always think quality of content that you know your audience likes and wants to come and see, come to your page to see or learn about is way more important than just how many posts you should make a day to get interaction. So, yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. We've had kind of a rule of thumb here. I don't know if you've, you know, actually been taught this or told this explicitly, but whenever we've done just basic social media management for an account, there's like a rule of thumb that we stick to. It's a 8-6-1 rule. I think that maths out to 15. For 15 posts a month, roughly one every other day, we look for 8 third-party resources, things that are going on in your industry that you're not writing about, but that still matters to your audience. You still want them to have that information.
Mm-hmm.
Then 6 first-party posts. So if you're writing blog posts or if you're just writing standard social posts, just to have a social visibility out there, posting those organically, and then having one like premium offer, one landing page that you drive them to, an ebook that you try to give your audience, or something else that's going to be related to what they care about, or something that's going to resonate with them, just so they don't get burnt out with your social posts, mm-hmm. so they don't become disillusioned with who you are as a brand.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that I did not know about that rule, but that was kind of something that I was kind of trying to drive. Yeah. And when in my past job, that we should probably aim more towards the side of giving out quality information, and then rather than a bunch of random crap every day.
Yeah, I love that. A bunch of random crap. Yeah, we've seen some pretty great success with that. Obviously, that's like how we test the waters. It's going to vary a little bit depending on the platform, and then the audience too that we're speaking to, and then also the industry. Like if we're writing about, oh my gosh, I can't even think of like a hyper technical thing that we write about offhand.
Mass spectrometry.
Yeah, spectrometry. Say that. Spectrometry. There's only so much that's out there that, you know, a layman is going to be able to interpret, us being a layman.
Yeah.
And that's going to be able to make meaningful, resonating content. Mm-hmm. So obviously, yeah, there's going to be some variance in it. It's not a hard, fast rule, but just taking that, making sure that you're sharing a lot of third-party content that you might not have, some of your own content, and then offering like a premium piece of content that has just a wealth of information in it.
Yep.
We've seen some pretty good success with that. So how do we see this world of getting your brand voice developed and heard online? How do we see this evolving over time?
I don't know. I wrote that I was gonna throw it to you first for this one to get the ball rolling.
This is one that I feel like the best answer is kind of a cop-out answer.
Okay.
Because we're seeing it shift already. And I think as AI continues to develop and can start analyzing your key audience, your entire social network, the people who are engaging with your posts, the people who aren't engaging with your posts that are following you, and then start understanding what types of posts perform well for your audience, what don't. And as it begins to get integrated with these social platforms, I think we're going to be able to see fantastic social posts being created at the push of a button that is going to quote unquote resonate with your audience. Now, is the audience an audience of actual people or is it an audience of bots? You know, time will tell on that. Stay off Twitter if that's what you're worried about.
Yes.
But I think it's going to be a lot more AI driven, like most things are. And I hate that that's the way that I see it going. I think it's my pessimistic view. But unfortunately, that's the reality that we're in. So maybe I'm going to be completely wrong. Maybe here we'll do a follow-up in 6 months, in a year, or heck, 5 years, and AI will just completely dissolve out. And it'll be a fad like the internet or those darn computers or whatever it was people were saying in the late 80s.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you on that one. I definitely don't think AI is a fad, especially with how fast it's developing every single day. There's something
closer to that singularity.
Something new to learn. And I'm not highly versed in AI. I mean, a little secret though, I did use it to write some social posts in my old job.
Ooh. Oh, okay, in your old job.
No, I don't write social posts here. So okay, I haven't used it for that, but I have used it in the past.
We have an AI committee if you're interested in joining.
AI committee. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, I mean, I've used it kind of to try stuff out with like images and whatnot, but ultimately, in my graphic video photo world, I mostly just want to do that myself. But if it got good enough one day to do exactly what I wanted it to, maybe I'm not using it well enough, I don't know. But I do agree that for stuff like social media, I think you could really use that to tailor post to very much so like resonate with your audience once you establish your brand voice with the AI. I agree with you.
Very cool. Real quick, this is neither here nor there, but I think I saw a pretty cool add-on coming to Photoshop pretty soon. It's a plain text interface where you tell it what you want it to do to the photo and then it just does it automatically.
Oh yeah, I think I saw.
Cannot wait. I'm gonna be a graphic designer in no time now. Just like I'm now a coder with ChatGPT,
yeah.
An artist with DALL-E, and the list goes on.
Yeah.
All right, Rachel, any closing thoughts for how somebody might go about building a brand voice, what it means to actually build a brand voice online, or anything else that we've talked about today that you haven't had a chance to get out there?
No, my final note here, I focus this a lot on social media. Maybe that's because I have some previous experience in it, and that's kind of where the phrase brand voice takes me. So I just kind of said, like, everything in the social media world, but that also goes for just online in general, is constantly changing, and there's always going to be new ways to adapt and grow and define your brand voice. There's always going to be new ways to get closer to your target audience. And like you said, with AI stuff, I think that's making it easier and quicker to do so already. And I think we're just going to keep seeing new ways to continue that upward trend.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, gosh, there's so much going on with it. And seeing how AI is just going to completely, I think, flip it on its head here in 6 months, and then again 6 months after that, and so on ad nauseum. That really, my advice would be just get started with it. You know, get some posts out there, see what's going to resonate, and then don't be afraid to dive into some of the AI tools. They're very, user-friendly, especially something like ChatGPT or Claude, or heck, we've used Jasper to help write stuff previously as well. Or if you have a massive backlog of blogs or services pages on your website, take a look at how those can be used to create engaging derivative works for social too. Figure out what's going to most resonate with your core audience and roll with it. Maybe it's going to be a ton of memes.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll be scientific research papers.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll be something entirely else.
Yeah.
Who's to say? That's why you got to get started and figure it out.
Yep. I completely agree with all that.
All right. Well, that's all the time that we have for today. Rachel, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah.
I hope
thank
you had as much fun as I did.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to end it there. Thank you for taking the time to listen, and stay tuned for the next episode. Cheers.